You are listening to the Joe Rogan Experience Review Podcast. We find little nuggets, treasures, valuable pieces of gold in the Joe Rogan Experience Podcast and pass them on to you, perhaps expand a little bit. We are not associated with Joe Rogan in any way. Think of us as the Talking Dead to Joe's Walking Dead.
You're listening to the Joe Rogan Experience Review.
What a bizarre thing we've created.
Now with your host, Adam Thorne.
This might either be the worst podcast or the best one of all time.
One, go. Enjoy the show.
Let's tell everybody what's going on with your iPad. So because you had a stroke, you have difficulty. Do you have difficulty hearing or?
Well, no, I can hear just perfectly right now. There's just the one kind of a lingering issue. There's a lingering issue. And sometimes I lose just a couple steps on time. And then now, after that, that's the only thing. And thankfully, the stroke never touched my intellect things. But the stroke nearly killed me. And again, I don't. I use captioning in situations just like this, in interviews. That's why I can really make sure exactly what's being said, and then I can able to just participate. If somebody wears the glasses, it doesn't mean that they're illiterate. It just means that's a tool that allows them to participate or drive or those things. And it's that same thing. And a lot of people across America use captioning to watch movies and TV, and that's really no different than that.
So it doesn't affect your intellect, but it does affect your hearing? Is that what's going on?
No, I can hear and I can listen to music. The difference with music, for example, is that as long as there's muscle memory, I can remember all of those kinds of music things. But it seems unlikely at this point that they're not going to be any kind of new favorites emerging like that.
Because so you essentially can listen to the same old music forever?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's John Fetterman, senator, right?
Senator.
Discussing an issue that he has and a tool that he uses to overcome the issue that he got from a stroke. And basically, he uses some sort of listening system on an iPad that creates closed captioning when he's talking to somebody. I think that would help a lot of people trying to stay focused. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I know that aren't deaf and use closed captioning when they're watching Netflix or whatever. They just have it on.
Yeah, that's me. I'm one of those people.
I've noticed.
I can hardly watch TV anymore without them. I don't know if it's because there's like a disconnect in my brain or because I'm using probably multitasking, thinking about other things on my phone. But I just have a hard time understanding or like kind of just like keeping track of what's going on unless I'm reading and listening at the same time. I also think some of these tools are so helpful in other situations, even temporary environments. Like say you have a baby in the house and you can't turn the volume up, right? You want to know you want to hear all the detailed conversations and all the nuances, but you need to keep the volume low. Like, tools like that are super helpful, and I think it's great that technology exists in the for people in all different situations in their lives.
Look, and I think he explained it really well too. I mean, he wasn't making excuses or stumbling over himself and saying, "Oh yeah, I had the stroke, so now I've got I've got problems."
Yeah.
He's just like, "No, it's a tool." I mean, when he said about people that wear glasses,
yeah,
you know, to read. Doesn't mean that they're not good readers. They just can't see the letters.
Right.
I mean,
it's like the processing needs an extra boost, right? And he did say that the stroke did not touch his intellect, which, you know, thank goodness. That would be really hard to go from being someone in a, you know, high level government office to someone whose intellect was affected by this medical, you know, condition. But just needs a tool, and I think
he had that stroke while he was running to get the position.
Yeah.
I mean, think of the stress.
Oh.
And then that happens, and then he still makes it in. I mean, honestly, very impressive.
So much.
And, you know, like Rogan was saying, and I think what makes him seem so down to earth, like, not just that he talks like a regular person.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't sound like he's bullshitting you.
No.
You know, he sounds like he's trying to find the right answer and the best thing for the country. But, you know, doesn't wear suits. He just wears what's comfortable. It's not polished.
Yeah.
Anything about him is not polished. And to be able to win like that, it gives me hope that we might start picking candidates for the right reasons rather than, oh, this dude looks rich and yells at everyone.
Yeah, I think I 100% agree. I would say there's potentially a fine line in, maybe it's because I'm indoctrinated into this like system where politicians are typically very well dressed and, you know, in suits and things like that. But I think a little bit of effort sometimes in that department can go a long way. Maybe it's the female in me where it's like, well, I know when I get dressed up sometimes, I'm just like, I feel like I'm operating at a higher caliber, right? But I love jeans and a sweatshirt as much as the next person, you know. Mm-hmm. I love to be comfortable. I would say, you know, especially on something like Joe Rogan, who cares, right? Like Joe literally wears like camo workout shorts all the time, like on mm-hmm. his own podcast.
But, you know, he mostly wears a suit even to when he commentates the UFC, or a shirt. He's like, at least got a nice shirt on. Yeah. So even Joe has his like dressing up approach.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it takes anything away from John that he's like, I never do.
No, not at
all. I never feel good about it. And if I'm going to lose votes because of that, then maybe I have to just be extra good at my job to make up for it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is good motivation.
I mean, if you're voting for a candidate because you like their outfit, there's something wrong with you, not with them, right?
Like, yeah, I mean, there's something to it. I think when it comes to a president, mm-hmm. like someone that, like, is the face of your country almost.
Yeah.
They got being sharp, looking strong, looking confident, being clean cut is a good move.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Boris Johnson just always looked like a mess. And he was the British prime minister for a while. His hair was a mess. He just looked like he just woke up. I mean, it was like he looked like a buffoon.
Yeah.
You know? And whether he acted like it or not, it's like impressions like that mean something.
Yeah, but I think his attire, like it just breaks the norm. I think it kind of goes along with sort of how he is sort of a different politician.
Yeah.
He thinks more like the common person, I would say, and he's really advocating for the people, not for the I mean, I don't want to say for the policies, but he's not answering to the money. He's really thinking about what the people need, and at least in his opinion, of course, that's always a subjective thing.
I'm inclined to believe him too. I mean, here's the elements about him that kind of make me trust him more, right?
Mm-hmm.
The how candid he was about mm-hmm. everything, about why he dresses the way that he does. Mm-hmm. You know, he's like, I got toothpick legs and no ass. Like, he wasn't trying to sugarcoat anything.
Right.
And he's like, yeah, I had this stroke. And then he goes, the stroke led to like pretty bad depression. And that's like an incredibly vulnerable thing to talk about. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of politicians out there that would deny ever having emotions and feelings like that. They want you to believe they are extremely polished, everything's together, they're always at the top of their game. And it's like, it's just not that human of a trait,
right,
to hear about.
Yeah, his vulnerability was, dare I say, I don't want to say empowering, but like it just made me feel like, gosh, I want to know more what this guy has to say, because I feel like he's relatable. I feel like he isn't faking with me, you know? Like, I really genuinely care about what he has to say. And I think that's, in a politician, you know, as a politician, that's what you want, is for people to care what you're saying, not just be like, yeah, right? Like, you really want them to be tuned in and dialed into that.
It does make you think, right, the depression thing. It's like, obviously, if you're a congressperson or a senator, you have insurance, medical insurance from the government. You know, it's like many government jobs. But again, it's not like cutting your hand open. That's clearly an injury that you have to get fixed. Mental health isn't like that. It's still a voluntary, you got to get over This episode is brought to you by DraftKings Casino. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Holidays on the house at DraftKings Casino with this season's offerings. You'll unwrap everything on your list. Exclusive games, huge jackpots, and exciting rewards. DraftKings is offering a warm welcome to new players with $100 instantly in casino credits with just a $10 wager. Plus, everyone can get in on the action with a holiday reward every week. So sign up with code JRER because the holiday cheer is here. Only on DraftKings Casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. 21 plus, physically present in Connecticut, Michigan, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, West Virginia only, void in Ontario. Eligibility restrictions apply. New customers only. Opt-in required. Casino credits are non-withdrawable and expire in 168 hours. Terms at casino.draftkings.com/promos. To the therapist or psychiatrist or whatever and talk to them.
Yeah.
And possibly when you're in the position of Senate or Congress, you know, it's a bit of a stigma if you're like going off to get mental health help all the time. Instead, why not flip the script on that and have good therapists present and available often?
Yeah.
Because it's not unreasonable that people with a very stressful, high power position job, you know, will have these moments. And to think that, you know, he's not going to be the only senator that is suffering from depression, right?
Oh,
no chance.
I mean,
do we want somebody that is like very depressed and not doesn't have the outlet to talk to somebody like in that position? You know, I'm not saying we should take John out. I don't mean that. I mean, sure. Let's make sure these people have support so that they kind of have help there.
I think that's it. I think the support that these people are advocating for the masses, right? They aren't just like a CEO of a company being like, I'm just, you know, just my shareholders. That's what I'm advocating for. They're advocating for these large groups of people with all from all different walks of life. They're working tirelessly for many, many, many years. It's a long game, politics and political careers. And typically the deterioration of your mental health happens over a long period of time, but there's a long game in healing your mental health as well. And so you can't just say, oh, just go see a therapist 3 times and figure it out, you know, right, or it'll be fixed. So I think it begs the question of like, is there access, the appropriate levels of mental health access, your mental health therapy and healthcare across the board in our country? I mean, we know the answer, which is no, like absolutely not.
Right.
And let's just, you know, bet on people like John who are open and honest about their mental health and perhaps they're going to be the types of politicians that advocate and start putting in legislation that requires it in certain areas of, you know, our, you know, the certain types of careers, you know, especially those that are of high stress. I think it's so critical to operate on that like high caliber level.
Yeah. No, it's very true. It's very true. You know, one thing that he touched on that I actually found quite refreshing, and it was, I think, similar to what J.D. Vance was saying. It's like when they were talking about the complexities of the immigration issue. I mean, there is this narrative out there, and Elon Musk believes in it, that the left has been shipping these immigrants to these swing states and then fast-tracking them through immigration to get to a voting position.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I didn't ever second-guess that until J.D. Vance was like, well, I don't know about that. It might be more to do with... He was like, there's some truth in that, but it also might just be labor shortages, mm-hmm, and getting cheap labor into these specific areas. And John Fetterman was kind of on board with that. I'm not saying I'm deciding one or the other is true.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to hear these different viewpoints. And there seems like a genuine logic to either. It's almost like you could just pick a side, or we could wait for more information to come in. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, there's that concept of there's three sides to every story. And I feel like we're still waiting on the truth. So there's the right side, the left side, and then what's actually happening. And I feel like we're still waiting on that truth.
Right.
And further, what the solution is to alleviate the stress around this topic, right? Like, why is
it? Well, I think that there is an immigration process in place that's been established over a long period of time, which is usually a good way of establishing policy, not rushing anything, you know, not being like arbitrarily 6 feet social distancing. That's how we do it.
Right.
Base it on a process, takes 5 years if you want citizenship, and then you blah, 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 and here's the right. So there's this process.
Yeah.
And you also can't do it illegally.
Right.
You have to get visas. You have to kind of work it that way. There's also asylum way of doing it. And then there's, I think, something built in for like if people have been illegal in the country for like a long period of time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's something like they can show that they work and they don't have a criminal record. And,
right.
You know, they can kind of work their way in that way. Using that system, which we already have, I think both left and right agree that that's like a decent process. Maybe there's some tinkering to be done. Maybe make it slightly less complicated, you know, for people that don't speak English as well and have to fill all those damn forms out, like something like that. But letting them in illegally is definitely a bad plan. And then shipping them around the country, also a bad plan.
Right.
I just cannot understand how anybody would think that that is okay.
Yeah, I think the argument that I've heard from, you know, the left argument is you ship them to where potentially there's the need for this labor, these labor shortages, or there's, you know, space, or there's, you know, welcoming in communities or whatever. And then on the topic of sort of expediting their citizenship, you know, if it is due to workforce shortage and we want to have them be working legally and taxed as Americans are, they do need to be a citizen. So the whole expediting the citizenship,
To be taxed, you just need a worker's permit. A worker's permit.
Got it.
So you can get worker's permits for lots of different visa types.
Right. So then, yeah, like, what is the explanation other than for expediting citizenship, other than to allow them to vote, right? Like, is that the intention? Is it to give them more rights? Is it to tax them differently? Is it so that they can, you know, apply for other government services like healthcare, you know, like Medicare or Medicaid, excuse me, or, you know, government housing? Like, what is the purpose? What is the explanation from the left? Obviously, being on the defensive side of any topic, it's hard because you can kind of speculate out. Like, you can sort of be like, oh, maybe it's this, maybe it's this. Or, you know, it's like, they're against me, and it's totally like, you know, to mess up my agenda. But that's not always the truth. Like, usually there is somewhere in the middle something that's truly happening. And that's what I'm so desperate to know in this situation.
I think with this one, what's interesting and what Elon is drawn on is, even if the original motivation wasn't for votes, he is the type of thinker that will extrapolate out into the future of what it will what will happen. And even if you're just trying to fill the need for labor shortages, you know, and or trying to help, you know, immigrants quickly that are maybe in a bad way in Mexico, wherever they came from, right? Which is a very liberal thing to do.
Right.
In terms of just wanting to help, right?
Yeah.
However, if the unexpected consequence is that now you're getting all these votes, enough to sway an election or continued future elections because of those actions, it almost builds its own conspiracy.
Right.
It's like an accidental conspiracy theory. And I don't think Elon cares either way what's behind
it. Right.
He's like, this is going to happen because of this.
Right.
Like, for example, he's one of the few people that constantly talks about the population crisis in mm-hmm. the world and how if we don't have enough kids, eventually we run out of people. Mm-hmm. This isn't this idea that we're saving resources and it's better for the environment. It's like you won't be able to look after the elderly in your community, mm-hmm. in your society, if you don't have enough kids. It's like he's not thinking an hour ahead. Right. And he's not thinking to the next election. He's trying to get us on fucking Mars.
Yeah, I was going to say that too. I think there are certain people on our planet, like Elon, that maybe have the capacity, have like the mental acuity to think that far out, right? To think about how our actions today, every small action today really does affect the long-term, you know, quality of life here on our planet or in our country. And I don't know that every politician is doing that. A lot of them, you know, just like humans, you know, we're like, we're fulfilling needs that we have right now, right? Maslow's hierarchy of needs. We have, you know, food, clothes, warmth, things like that. The humanitarian in me absolutely wants immigrants to come here and like have the opportunity to have the American dream and to have housing and healthcare and food and, you know, school for their children. But I also wonder, just like, you know, you just mentioned, like, how does that affect our elections 2 to 3 elections from now when those children are now voters and they're, you know, very Democratic and, you know, or they vote very left and they're like, you know, well, this is why, you know, and for good reason for them, right? It makes sense for them to vote that way. But for those communities, it's like that was not an organic buildup of voters. That was an inorganic way of like swing the election in those counties or those communities.
Right.
So it doesn't truly reflect the people and the ideals there because it was basically thrust upon them.
Yeah. And listen, stuff like that will happen naturally anyway.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. And what I mean by that is, you know, maybe a huge exodus of people from California because of COVID.
Yeah.
Moving into other areas of the country,
yeah,
like Texas or Austin,
yeah,
in particular, and really kind of pressing the left-leaning vote in those areas. It's like, that's what migration does.
Yeah.
But when it's potentially being orchestrated, you know, it's almost like the same thing as doing that gerrymandering,
mm-hmm.
you know, where they move the lines,
yes,
because like there's two blocks that are all Republicans, so they're, yeah, like, well, we want to take those votes out or vice versa.
Yeah.
Sneaky things. And listen, to be clear, I don't want that happening on either side.
Right.
You know, I don't want anything. I don't want Republicans doing anything that could sway the election that much.
Yeah.
In one way. And I don't want the left doing it either.
No. Right.
It's like, hey, you've got enough other resources. Get a good candidate. You've already got a shitload of money that you can spend,
yep,
on the, you know, commercials and podcasts. And there's, you got a lot of ways to win.
Mm.
Just also do a good job and mm-hmm. then you'll probably win.
Yeah.
Talking about that though, and we get into money and politics, but I think something moving forward should be not how much you raised, but how little you spent of what you raised.
Mm.
Because to me, that speaks to how you run the economy.
Totally.
Of course. Doesn't it make sense?
Well, yeah. I mean, like, there's
Trump
that
spent like half his money.
Yeah.
And Kamala had over $1 billion and bankrupted her
spent
campaign.
More than that. Yeah. I mean, there was that argument. I'd heard, seen that kind of bounced around many from many angles of, you know, what would you do if you didn't spend the money you raised on campaigning on advertising for yourself, but rather on, you know, benefiting
building homes in Maui,
yeah,
where they burned down
the topics that you're the pillars of your campaign, actually putting your money where your mouth is, right? And saying, we raised $1 billion, I'm not advertising for to be a president, but I'm gonna put $500,000 into this, $150,000 into, you know, $150 million into this, like, and actually trying to move the needle on some of these things.
That's genius.
And saying, I don't care if I win. All I care about is these policies, and that makes me want to vote for
someone.
That's
what you should have done.
100%.
If we were a campaign manager, well, you especially, because you came up with the idea, but if it was like, hey, you need to go on all these podcasts, these big comedian podcasts.
For free.
That honestly have been leaning more right.
Yeah.
Because of a lot of the dumb policies of your party. But go on those so everyone can hear your message.
Mm-hmm.
Talk like a normal person. Don't act like a crazy person.
Don't laugh the whole time.
Right.
Don't giggle drunk, your way through.
but talk like a normal person and say, hey, we've raised this billion and we want to do exactly what you just said.
Yeah.
We're not wasting it on all these commercials. You won't see a bunch of, you know, commercials of the Super Bowl or fucking wherever else they waste their money.
So stupid.
They're not going to give $50 million to a bunch of dumb celebrities to come out and sing terrible songs while they're like, we love Kamala.
Yeah.
And if they were like, yeah, we're helping inner city kids. We just put money with these schools.
Yeah.
We just put another $200 million towards this program that we believe in.
Mm-hmm.
And the message there could be, hey, even if we don't win, we've actually done a lot of good.
Right.
Which is the whole point of getting in. What does Kamala do? Blow it all.
That's for me, like with our politics, it's, I mean, I know in a democratic society, it's always about like the party, right? The loyalism to the party being in, not really the candidate. But for me, like, and I've talked to you about this before. If I, in a magical world where I get to design the tax system, it would be, you know, 25% of my taxes go towards what the government deems necessary, right? Roads, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, building things, you know, maintaining the country, paying the government employees, whatever that is, stuff that I may not even understand is a necessity. The other 75%, I get to dictate to some capacity. I get to say, I want to contribute more to schools. I want to contribute more to taking care of old people. I want to contribute to building housing for poor people or giving food to those in poverty, like whatever that is. And actually that way the money spent is actually reflective of what the people want. Does that make sense? I think if a candidate came out and said, I've raised $1 billion. Now, as a country, whether you want to vote for me or not, I want you to go online. I want you to take this survey and I want you to tell me how to spend this money for the people of this country.
Right.
Where is this money going to go? How much should I give? And find a way to gauge that. And
everyone just gives trips to Vegas.
I mean, obviously, you know, I mean, they're, you know, proposing certain things and giving 10 options and saying like, you know, which are the top three most important things to you? And these are what how I'm going to divvy up my money. And, you know, is it homeless animals? Is it, you know, the people in Maui? Is it the people that just suffered from the hurricanes in, you know, the South, in Florida and Georgia and North Carolina? Like, what is it that's really important to you? And I feel like that we need more of that in our country, in all, you know, in the tax system, in every you know, facet of how we spend our money, like, you know, philanthropy to some extent, like being part of what we do and giving our money to those to those like things that we care about, rather than the things that someone tells us we have to, right? Like paying for all of these government employees that when we go and need their services, they're assholes, like the DMV, right? Like that just doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel empowering. And it definitely doesn't make me vote for anyone one way or another.
Well, and you know, what's interesting is this was kind of unprecedented, the money they raised this time around on both the left and the right, but especially the left. But even that, it's like, these days, it costs somewhere around $100 million to get into a Senate seat. So think about it. There's how many? 100 of them? 100 senators. Every, what is it, 4 or 8 years, they get reelected. So they got to run again.
Yeah.
So that's how many hundreds of millions?
Yeah.
Every how long?
And I think John was saying
that massive waste of money. And what does he get paid? $175,000 a year?
Yeah. I think he was saying that someone that like the other party spent like $100 million trying to not let him in office. Basically, you spend $100 million on the defense. You get nothing except to not let the other person in. So it's like, why not do more good with that rather than trying to, like, I don't know. It just feels so ass backwards to me.
It's because it really does highlight. It's about winning and power rather than helping. It's like, it's far less common for somebody to do a very gracious, charitable offering and not take any credit for it.
Yeah.
You know, those stories are always beautiful when it's like the guy that just delivers the food to the elderly neighbor lady, and but only knocks on the door and walks off and never takes any credit for it. It's like truly selfless.
Yeah.
You know, these politicians are not those people.
Right.
Right? They're megalomaniacs that want to be president half the time. Like they want everyone to know who they are, this power of them getting in. They don't even care about collecting their paycheck because they're probably going to insider trade the whole time they're in there while they pretend to care about, you know, freaking Joe Smo.
Yeah.
That works at the mechanic place. It's like, whatever, dude. And listen, I'm a bit kind of negative and skeptical when it comes to politicians, right? I'm just always suspicious of what they're up to. I'm sure there's some decent ones. I think John sounds like a genuine guy that wants to help and do good things. But I always say, keep an eye on them, all of them.
Yeah.
Like, they're sneaky.
Well, I would love to see from John, you know, having him come on here, being so candid about how much money is spent and how much money is spent on the defense, on the offense to, you know, win and lose an election, how much he makes, you know, I mean, $175,000 is very average. I mean, not average, but it's like not like an incredible salary in today's economy, right? Like he's probably just making it like a lot of people are. I mean, it's good. Don't get me wrong. I'm not, but
yeah.
What I'd really love to see from him is some legislation, you know, initiated by him on spending in political campaigns. And I don't know if whether that's a tier system,
I don't think that they get to just write any bills that they want. They're usually on committees. So one will be on like the energy.
Yeah.
One's on the, I don't know, the education committee,
right.
So they're only kind of writing bills that are connected to that. I think they can also,
they can build committees though if there's something.
I think so, yeah.
So you know, whether it's something where he's like, I want to put some new I want to really turn the campaigning, you know, in the American political system on its head. How do we start that? Who else is with me? Like, just want to hear a little bit more noise from him. I mean, coming on here is a great start. Talking about it, being open and candid is great. It's a perfect way to like get the conversation going. But
Do you think the kind of conversation that they had went well enough in terms of what you know about Rogan for Rogan to have him back on? I think so. I think Rogan liked talking to him.
I think so. I mean, they started out sort of talking about like Fetterman being very relatable in the fact that his son was a fan of Joe Rogan. And I feel like that's cool. It's sort of like a theme. It's like a thing that we hear about a lot of the guests, you know, of like,
do you know that Gavin Newsom once made like I don't know if it was a speech or just some statement saying that he wants to create legislation to basically censor podcasts because he found out his son was listening to Rogan and he was that like upset about it. Yet John can come on, be liberal and say, oh yeah, my son thinks you're great.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's
Gavin Newsom sucks is my point.
You really do not like that man.
I do not like it.
You know, I would say to answer your question, yes, I think it was a really good, genuine conversation. I liked how the platform gives people the opportunity to come and get to know Joe and for Joe to get to know them like on a personal level, like really dive into like what makes them tick and like what their personal life is like versus their professional life. I think it is refreshing, you know, with all of the, you know, the conservative candidates and people and people supporting Trump that, you know, I said it so many times leading up to the, but like people that, you know, said that they wanted to vote for Trump, to have someone sort of on the other side come on. Like, I think it goes to show that this platform has the ability to cover it all, right? And once it gets censored, that's when that falls apart.
I mean, listen, he's not having, and people have been recently giving him a hard time about, oh, he has a lot more right leaning people on than left. Right.
Yeah.
Although not necessarily true, because I'm sure most of the comedians that come on, which are most of his guests, are all left.
Yeah.
However, you know, saying that, he's not going to have AOC on or Gavin Newsom or like the more wacky liberals. He's just not going to do it. And when I say that, I don't mean also like really very left. I mean, he'd have Bernie on again any second, I think. I think he really enjoyed talking with Bernie. He supported Bernie after he came on and was like, that's my guy.
Yeah.
You know, he values just, but you can't go on his show and be really wacky with what you're saying. He's just going to call you out.
I think, those people that are just all about wacky and they're like, AOC, she's just so reactive. She's so like defensive. You know, I, as a female, I want to be like a champion for any woman politician that supports the things she really believes in, both sides. I think everyone has a reason. Everyone has different levels of priorities. Everyone thinks things that what they're doing and saying and advocating for is the right thing. And I think any woman that has the guts to stand up and do that job when it is a male dominated industry, I'm all about it. But when you're like chaos, when someone comes at you and you're like literally like, you know, just like spewing bullshit like out on social media or like being super defensive, and just I lose a lot of respect for people in that sense. So I totally get what you mean.
What happens is Joe would generally bring up something about, you know, the gender affirming care or the transgender, you know, or like giving medication to kids.
Yeah.
And if you pick that side, then you just have to blindly go with it because you can't have nuances in there. You have to be like, I support this all the way or no. Mm-hmm. But then when you start breaking down elements of it and you say, well, you don't let kids have tattoos. They can't drink.
Right.
They can't, you know, leave the house and just go live somewhere else when they're 12.
Yeah.
So how can they make this decision that changes that? It's like those people that are on that side, they all break down then.
Yeah.
And they're only going to go on places that, I'm sure this is a lot why Harris didn't go on Rogan. Because there just will be, she basically has to stand for some ideas that are really just quite out there and not well formulated. And will lead you into a trap if you're just asking general questions about it, which are reasonable.
Yeah.
You know? But with John, that didn't happen. He was willing to face whatever Rogan came at him with, and I think he represented himself really well.
I really enjoyed it.
It's kind of like, gives you a better perception of the type of meaningful conversation you can have with senators, and especially ones that might not directly agree with your position on things.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Rogan came out for Trump, but it doesn't mean that he didn't respect what Fetterman had to say and who he is. So something pretty cool there. Anyway, let's call it for this week. I enjoyed it. I like that guy. I like to hear him back on. And, you know, it doesn't hurt to get the more of the story and perception from both sides, which I hope Joe keeps doing. I think he will. This is why he's able to kind of have that type of balanced perspective that he does.
I love it.
All right. Talk to you guys next week.
Cheers.